This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Inside migrant facilities. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Kashchenka, on this Wednesday, March 31st. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Reporters have gotten a look at one of the temporary processing centers in the Rio Grande Valley in Texas. We'll have details on the crowded conditions.
Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz is under investigation by the Justice Department for an alleged sexual relationship with an underage girl.
President Biden today expected to introduce a $2 trillion infrastructure plan to be paid for in part by a hike in the corporate tax rate.
And as the NCAA celebrates its final four basketball teams, it also faces the challenge of player compensation.
State lawmakers, federal lawmakers, and of course the court have stepped in to propose legislation that would liberalize the rules to allow athletes to make money while they're in college. So Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, not long ago actually said, we actually need federal legislation now because there's going to be, in the absence of that, there's going to be this patchwork of state laws that are all going to conflict with one another.
Rachel Bachman at the Wall Street Journal. As the Supreme Court hears arguments today about college athletes potentially earning money from things like endorsements. The second day of testimony in the murder trial of a former Minneapolis cop included emotional witness testimony. Prosecutors began their case with extensive use of the video showing George Floyd under the knee of Officer Derek Chauvin as he begs for his life and eventually loses consciousness. On the stand yesterday was Darnella Frazier, a 17-year-old high school student last year, when she recorded a video that ultimately went viral. She testified that she has spent many sleepless nights thinking about the incident last May.
Was there any point in your video, whether it's 9 or 10 minutes, that Mr. Chauvin ever let up or got up off of the neck of Mr. Floyd that you saw?
No. If anything, he actually was kneeling harder.
She recounted how Mr. Floyd, who was 46, was calling for his mother as she recorded with her cell phone. Mr. Chauvin, who's 45 years old, has been charged with second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and manslaughter. He has pleaded not guilty. The Biden administration has finally allowed reporters inside the crowded border tents where record numbers of migrant teenagers and children have been held in recent weeks after crossing into this country without their parents. Granted access yesterday were the Associated Press and a CBS camera crew. They toured the temporary processing facility in Donna, Texas, where 3,400 unaccompanied minors were in custody, along with 700 members of migrant families. The reporters allowed inside described extreme levels of overcrowding, including one detention pod with 516 minors, despite a pandemic-rated capacity of 32 people. Border Patrol Deputy Chief Raul Ortiz.
Our facilities were never designed to hold people for longer than a couple of days, much less, you know, 8 or 9 days, which we've seen on occasion.
The facility more broadly has a capacity of 250 people, but more than 4,100 were being housed on the property. The Biden administration has faced mounting criticism for its handling of the influx of migrants arriving at the border, as well as its strict limits on media access to detention sites. Well, the Justice Department is investigating whether Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz had a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old girl 2 years ago and paid her to travel with him. The Wall Street Journal and New York Times say the probe, which began last year, is looking into whether federal sex trafficking laws were violated. It's illegal to transport someone younger than 18 over state lines to engage in sex. Mr. Gaetz, a 38-year-old Republican who represents part of the Florida Panhandle, denied the allegations on Fox News, saying they're part of an effort to blackmail him.
The person doesn't exist. I have not had a relationship with a 17-year-old. That is totally false. The allegation, as I read it in the New York Times, is that I've traveled with some 17-year-old in some relationship. That is false, and records will bear that out to be false.
The Justice Department's examination of Mr. Gaetz is connected to an investigation of Joel Greenberg, a local official in Florida, who court documents show was indicted in August on sex trafficking charges related to a girl between the ages of 14 and 17. Coming up next, President Biden's first slate of judicial nominees. If you like what you hear on our show each day, there's good news, especially if you have something to say or something to add to the conversation. You can now find us live every Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern on the Stereo app. Stereo is the app for live social conversations where you can talk to us directly, ask questions, make comments, or just listen to what your fellow listeners have to say. Just download the Stereo app from your favorite app store and be sure to follow me at stereo.com/GordonDeal. So you're notified every time we go live. That's stereo.com/GordonDeal, and you'll be ready to join in. You'll hear brand new exclusive content about topics we typically can't discuss on the show. And best of all, we get to hear from you. Got a hot take on the latest food trend? Great. Have a question you've always wanted to ask? Perfect. Join us every Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern on Stereo. And follow me at stereo.com/GordonDeal. That's stereo.com/GordonDeal. Hey, glad you could spend part of your Wednesday with us. President Biden has announced his first slate of federal judicial nominees. Morgan Chalfant, White House reporter at The Hill, says Mr. Biden's first group of 11 judicial nominees includes several women and people of color. Morgan, explain.
So a lot of these names didn't come as a surprise. They had been circulated for a while, and we knew Biden would announce a slate of judicial nominees. I think a big takeaway is just the decision to name Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson as the nominee to the U.S. Appeals Court in Washington. Her name had been floated around quite a bit. She will now replace, if confirmed, she'll replace the seat vacated by Merrick Garland, who's, of course, now Attorney General. This is someone who could potentially be a Supreme Court nominee for Biden if he does see a vacancy during his time. I think the other takeaway broadly about the list, too, is how diverse it really is. Biden has obviously made a point of putting women and minorities, people of color, in roles across the federal government. And this really continuation of that theme. There's many women on this list, individuals of color. I believe Press Secretary Jen Psaki noted that there are four individuals belonging to the Asian American and Pacific Islander community. There are a lot of diverse individuals here, and this really reflects what Biden has tried to do with his government as well, make it diverse, make it, look like America, as he says.
For the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, it's a big deal, as you referenced, for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, because that's often a stepping stone, or has been in the past, a stepping stone to the Supreme Court. Have we had any buzz about resistance to her at this point?
I don't think there's been much resistance to her, no. She was also floated as a potential Supreme Court nominee for Barack Obama as well, back when he was nominating someone to fill Scalia's seat. Of course, he nominated Garland, but Garland was never put to a vote or given a confirmation hearing. Right. I think that she'll be confirmed. I think the challenge that Biden has is if any of these nominees do run into pushback, he has a very, very, very slim majority in the Senate, being, Harris casting that tie-breaking vote by Vice President Harris. So these nominees really, they need to be confident that they can get all the Democratic support in order to avoid any situations where they need to pull the nomination. Of course, they could get Republicans to support these nominees, and I think that's possible in many of these cases, and possibly in Jackson's case as well, but it's harder to count on that when the Republicans have been, with the exception of a few, very, united against, Biden's agenda.
Yeah. We're speaking with Morgan Chalfant, White House reporter at The Hill. Her piece is called Biden Announces First Slate of Diverse Judicial Nominees. How many of this group of 11, say, are a nod to the progressive wing of the party?
There's several. There's a few former public defenders, and I think that sits well with that community. The White House have been under pressure to nominate more public interest attorneys, people involved in civil rights, and so I think there are four, I believe, are former public defenders. And so I think that reflects that effort there to get people in the progressive wing on board.
And who's the judge toward the end of the year story that seemed to have some resistance, because was it Regina Rodriguez who was supported by Senator Bennett from Colorado? What's the issue there?
There's a group, a progressive group, Demand Justice, that launched an ad campaign against her, arguing that she didn't fit the mold of the judge that the White House has said it would seek. She's a corporate partner of a corporate law firm, former federal prosecutor. A lot of progressives have been wary of individuals with these corporate law firm ties, and I think that's what you're seeing here. It's gone beyond the judicial selection process as well. I've heard from progressives wariness about ties to corporate, law firms for just Justice Department posts as well, and other positions in the government. And I think that's what you're seeing with her nomination, and I think you see it with other nominations as well.
Thanks, Morgan. Morgan Chalfant, White House reporter at The Hill. 20 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A Minneapolis firefighter who voiced frustration at being prevented from using her EMT training to help George Floyd will be back on the stand today in the trial of the fired police officer charged in Floyd's death. Genevieve Hansen, one of several bystanders seen and heard shouting at Derek Chauvin as he pinned Floyd face down last May, cried yesterday as she recounted how she was unable to come to Floyd's aid or tell police what to do, such as administering chest compressions.
In my memory, I tried different tactics of calm and reasoning. I tried to be assertive. I pled and was desperate.
Witness after witness described how Chauvin was unmoved by their pleas.
Number two.
Authorities have arrested a man who viciously attacked an Asian American woman Monday near New York City's Times Square. Police have charged 38-year-old Brandon Elliott, a lifetime parolee, with assault and hate crimes. Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer spoke at a rally.
This is a horrific act of racist violence. It's a deadly pattern. We know what happened in Atlanta, and we know what's happening elsewhere.
Officials also admonished bystanders and two security guards for doing nothing to stop Elliott, as police say he kicked the 65-year-old woman, knocked her to the ground, stomped on her, and shouted anti-Asian slurs at her. She's been discharged from the hospital after being treated for serious injuries. The Education Department says the federal government's pause on student loan payments is being extended to more than 1 million borrowers who have defaulted on student loans that are held by private lenders. The action is meant to bring relief to the hardest-hit borrowers in a program that allowed private lenders to provide student loans that were backed by the federal government. The program ended in 2010 when the Education Department became the sole lender of federally subsidized student loans. From first four to final four, UCLA's improbable run in the men's NCAA tournament continues as the 11th-seeded Bruins last night knocked out top seed Michigan. UCLA coach Mick Cronin.
But we're not done, and tomorrow's never promised, this is great, but we got work to do.
Unbeaten Gonzaga also advanced to the Final Four on the women's side. South Carolina and Stanford were Elite Eight winners.
All right, very good. Thank you, Jen. Coming up next, the latest in-person school rules. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. The latest CDC school guidelines that allow just 3 feet between students and not 6 feet could clear the way for more schools to bring more students into a classroom at a single time. It might also give a financial lift to some parents of children who have been learning remotely. More from Andrew Keschner, reporter at MarketWatch. Andy, take us through this.
A day ahead of the updated guidelines, the CDC also released a survey just looking at a bunch of things about the well-being of kids who are in school and in who were in remote school, and also the parents of the kids who are in school, physically in school or out. And, you know, one of the things they found was almost 43% of parents with kids receiving virtual instruction reported a loss of work, versus nearly 31% of parents who had a child with in-person instruction. And another thing is, about more than a quarter of the parents with kids, in their house learning remotely had job stability concerns, and that's versus the 15% of parents who had, 15% of parents who had kids in school.
Yeah.
So you see there's, a definite difference, between two groups of parents.
We're speaking with Andrew Keschner, reporter at MarketWatch. His piece is called New CDC School Guidelines Could Mean More Kids in Classrooms and More Financial Stability for Parents. It does seem like at this point, if it wasn't early on, that in school full time is everything.
Yeah. I mean, I live in New Jersey, and actually recently our governor, I think that, there will be no virtual instruction next year. The expectation is Monday through Friday, through the whole day. And I think a lot of experts are saying that, nothing is zero risk. But when it comes to schools versus, say, other things, I mean, this is a very reasonable risk to take. And there are, very few outbreaks in school compared to other things. And let's face it, it is education, and that's definitely important for the next generation, yeah. But it is a form of childcare, which is important for this generation now of workers who, need to, focus on work.
And now women seem to be struggling the most, right? I think we've seen this pattern.
Yes. Another way this is this so-called C-session, in that the women who've been just, this 1-2 punch, in many ways, women were predominant in jobs that fared very, very poorly in the lockdowns, like service sector jobs, and then combine that with the childcare and, like, the tug of being at home with kids at home, and, women have shouldered that burden.
Thanks, Andy. Andy Keschner, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. Don't forget, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well, at Gordon Deal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
Cutting through the clutter to bring you the people and stories that matter to you. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday, March 31. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Reporters detail crowded conditions in a migrant processing facility in Texas, where 4,100 people are in an area designed to hold 250. President Biden to unveil a $2 trillion infrastructure plan during remarks in Pittsburgh today. More rain for the South today on top of weekend flooding. Watergate figure G. Gordon Liddy has died at the age of 90. UCLA stuns Michigan to reach the men's Final Four, and the record-breaking number of Girl Scout cookies sold by an 8-year-old. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, for more than 100 years, the National Collegiate Athletic Association has been tightening its grip on what became the multi-billion-dollar college sports industry, with the lucrative annual men's basketball tournament as its flagship. But Rachel Bachman, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says in the next few months, the NCAA stands to lose control of its empire's future over an issue its member schools long hoped to avoid, and that's athlete compensation. The Supreme Court is set to hear some arguments today. Rachel, what's happening?
Well, what's happening is the Supreme Court is hearing a specific case, but what its ruling effectively will do is to decide the scope of the NCAA's rulemaking authority. And, you know, the context is for more than a century, the NCAA has said athletes are not prohibited, college athletes are not allowed to earn money from their name, image, or likeness, basically from their athletic fame. And that's one of the things that will be under consideration as sort of a concept at the Supreme Court.
Boy, okay. So I know there are lots of different opinions on this. Is there a general thinking that something is going to give in all of this?
Yes, even the NCAA itself, which has, you know, resisted, you know, big changes to athlete compensation for really forever, is now realizing that it's really kind of lost control of this issue. State lawmakers, federal lawmakers, and of course the court have stepped in to propose legislation that would liberalize the rules to allow athletes to make money while they're in college. So Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, not long ago actually said, we actually need federal legislation now because there's going to be, in the absence of that, there's going to be this patchwork of state laws that are all going to conflict with one another, and we can't run our organization with that.
Mm. What are the different ways potentially that a college athlete could make money, say, in uniform, I guess, or out of uniform?
Well, to be clear, this is not about colleges paying college athletes a salary. That's really not on the table right now. But what the liberalized rules would do, probably at minimum, is allow athletes to do things like endorse a product or, you know, to make an Instagram post that you know, promotes something. They might be able to record a personal greeting to a fan and be paid for it. You know, things like that that they're barred from doing now.
Wow. I used to think, well, you know, what's the difference if, you know, computer science major wants to endorse something on Instagram, something along those lines, but that's really not done in conjunction with the school, I guess.
It's not, but that's one of the things that college athletes have pointed to in asking for more rights. They said, hey, if a student at the music school records a song and sells that song, that student gets to keep the money. That student can promote that song or that album online and keep money from that too. And athletes are prohibited from doing that. And college athletes increasingly are saying that's just not fair.
Mm. We're speaking with Rachel Bachman, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She's got a story entitled NCAA Faces Showdown Over Player Compensation and Future of College Sports. What might this do to recruiting, say, at some of the big schools?
Well, I think one of the fears is that, you know, more liberalized rules would just create another pathway for people to cheat, you know, to for instance, bribe athletes through some, you know, ostensible marketing agreement or something to go to a certain school or stay at a certain school. Of course, you know, cheating already does happen. So it's not like that would be the first time. And some people say that, you know, the way that this would be documented would be, you know, through an app or digitally in a way that would make it actually easier to monitor athletes, you know, sales of their name, image, or likeness. So, you know, there really is disagreement about how this actually will play out.
Yeah. How about maybe within a single team itself? Is it possible that there could be jealousy in the locker room, say, one teammate's, you know, doing well and another's not with an endorsement, perhaps?
You know, that's another thing that critics of these changes have pointed to. They've said, hey, you know, maybe the starting quarterback will make, you know, $100,000 from, you know, appearances and endorsements and things like that. And his, you know, offensive lineman will make hardly anything.
That's Rachel Bachman, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, the next level of mixing condiments. In the sport of business, we're all players, and with the game always changing, you need to be versatile. So does your wardrobe. You want both style and comfort to look as good as you feel inside the office or out. That's what Cuts Clothing is all about. Cuts Clothing keeps you sharp wherever the game takes you, from the boardroom to the bar to the gym. How? They reinvented men's clothing, starting with the T-shirt. Their Pika Tri-Blend fabric is buttery soft, wrinkle-free, and keeps its shape. Everything I've worn from Cuts is next-level comfort. Their polos, hoodies, and crew sweatshirts, all classics, made modern with custom-engineered fabrics you have to wear to believe. So versatile, you'll never need to take them off, and so comfortable, you won't want to. It's not just the lifestyle. It's not just clothing. It's office leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know it's not considered safe to pick up hitchhikers while driving, but when there's thousands of them and they all have stingers, you aren't left with much of a choice. That's what happened to a New Mexico man who had 15,000 bees swarm his car in a supermarket parking lot over the weekend. The Las Cruces Fire Department posted about the incident on Facebook. According to the post, the unidentified man left his car window open while shopping at an Albertsons store. When he was done, the man reportedly packed up his groceries in the car and started driving away before he noticed the bees. Firefighters were called to the scene, including an off-duty firefighter who doubles as a beekeeper. After about 2 hours, the swarm was removed and taken to the beekeeper's property. Luckily, the injuries were minor. The department said a security guard at the store was stung and that a few patrons may have had, quote, close encounters with the hitchhiking bees.
Man. Yeah. 15,000 bees.
And you somehow managed to drive away without realizing they were just hanging out in the back seat.
Did you think that was a hum from your radio?
Yeah.
Like, what did you think with that?
Yeah. I don't mean, I know I'm out of it some days, you know, leaving here at work after a long day. I know I'm a little out of it sometimes, but I don't know if I'd ever be that out of it to not notice 15,000 bees.
Wow. And what do you do when you lose your bees if you're the beekeeper?
Yeah.
Do you, I don't know, missing bees report? Like, what happens? And if we'll get those. A firefighter happened to be a beekeeper, you said, right?
Yeah.
Let me get them. I'll bring them back to you.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that whoever, well, I guess, you know, they don't necessarily belong to somebody we don't know. They could have just been a wild swarm of bees. We don't know if someone's missing bees in the Las Cruces area or not.
Wow.
I guess we'll find out.
I can't imagine the hum.
Yeah.
The hum in your car with that going on.
And just driving along. Oh, look at that. Just in your rearview mirror, just seeing that happening in your rearview mirror.
Then what do you do? You slowly get out of your car to not create some sort of disturbance or attract attention to yourself?
Yeah, I don't know what the protocol is. Or do you slowly get out or do you run as fast as you can?
Wow.
And believe it or not, Gordon, it's been 3 years since Mayo Chup, the half-mayo, half-ketchup concoction by Heinz, came into our lives. That was followed shortly by Mayo Q and Mayo Must sauces, among others. Now, three years later, the brand realized there are more condiments they haven't mixed together yet, so they have two new additions rolling out to store shelves as we speak. Say hello to Buffa Ranch and Sweet Ketchili.
Mm.
A spokesperson for Heinz confirmed the two new flavors to Fox News. The creamy, spicy Buffa Ranch flavor is a blend of buffalo sauce and ranch dressing, while the savory Sweet Ketchili, a mix of ketchup and sweet chili sauce, is supposed to bring the heat. And according to Thrillist, the two new flavors are no passing craze and will be permanently joining the Heinz roster.
Ooh, it's nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Years ago, I missed out on a million-dollar idea when I think maybe 10, 15 years ago, I thought, you know what? You mix blue cheese and buffalo sauce together like it is when you're eating buffalo wings, right? You know, or ranch, you know, you mix those together. That tastes really, really good. Mm-hmm. Someone should make that sauce.
Wow.
Well, people started making that sauce.
Man.
So, you know, I missed out on my chance.
And that's why you work in radio.
Yes.
And not now, condiment mixing.
Yes. So now instead of, you know, sleeping late and rolling around in millions of dollars, I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and we come in and chat together.
Mm. Ketchili. Is that what you sweet ketchili.
Yeah.
Which I could see on scrambled eggs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Buffa Ranch on a, certainly a burger,
almost
wings,
almost anything.
Just
I feel like that would go well on a lot of
salad. Yeah.
Salad. Yes, that'd be great.
13 minutes in front of the hour. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending time with us. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by Capital One. Capital One has no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One N.A., member FDIC. Many people returning to offices in the coming months face an end to one of the secret perks of working from home, the daily nap. The Wall Street Journal says people who say they rarely napped before the pandemic have picked up the habit over the past year, worn out by the dramatic work-life balance challenges extending the workday like Zoom calls. In a survey, the jobs website Zipia said 33% found they took naps from working from home. And yet, while dozens of studies have shown the benefits, there is still a stigma. Experts say ideally, naps should be less than 30 minutes and taken earlier in the day to avoid interfering with nighttime sleep. Some say it's best to nod off somewhere that isn't your bed that you sleep on at night, like in a partially reclined chair or anywhere else where you're not lying completely flat. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Six witnesses took the stand in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, and several broke down in tears recounting their memory of the day George Floyd died. The witnesses included a mixed martial arts fighter, the teenager who recorded the now viral video of Floyd's death, two high school seniors, and a Minneapolis firefighter, bystander Alyssa Funari.
At first, he was vocal, and he got less vocal, and you could tell he was talking with, like, smaller and smaller breaths.
Chauvin is charged with second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter.
Number two.
The Biden administration, for the first time, allowed news media inside a customs and border protection facility facing unprecedented overcrowding due to the recent surge of migrant children and families. Media were allowed inside a temporary tent facility in Donna, Texas, which was meant to hold 250 migrants, but had a population of more than 4,100 as of yesterday.
Number three.
Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida, a prominent conservative, says he's being investigated by the Justice Department over a former relationship, but on Fox denied any criminal wrongdoing.
It is a horrible allegation, and it is a lie. The New York Times is running a story that I have traveled with a 17-year-old woman, and that is verifiably false. People can look at my travel records and see that that is not the case.
Gaetz is accused of having an inappropriate sexual relationship with a 17-year-old girl and paying her to travel with him. President Biden has signed into law a two-month extension of the Paycheck Protection Program one day before the coronavirus relief fund was poised to expire, giving small businesses until May 31st to apply for a forgivable loan. This year, through March 7th, the PPP has approved 2.4 million loans worth about $165 billion, just over half of the $284 billion allocated to the program when it reopened in January. G. Gordon Liddy, a mastermind of the Watergate burglary and a radio talk show host after emerging from prison, has died at age 90. Liddy was convicted of conspiracy, burglary, and illegal wiretapping for his role in the Watergate burglary. No surprise here, the NFL is increasing the regular season to 17 games while reducing the preseason to three. That means the Super Bowl will move back 1 week. The next one will be February 13th. The league also says it plans to have full stadiums this season.
Hooray! Thanks, Jen. Coming up next, the 8-year-old who can outperform your top sales rep.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. Here's a person your sales team may want to recruit. An 8-year-old from San Bernardino, California, broke a record for selling more than 30,000 Girl Scout cookies. Among her incentives, a promise to donate boxes to charity. The San Jose Mercury News says Lily Bumpus sold a whopping 32,484 boxes of Girl Scout cookies. She also had an inspiring story. Young Lily, who is a brownie-level scout, is a cancer survivor, leading her family to create a nonprofit in her name, the Team Lily Foundation, to help kids battling cancer. With a week left of the season, Lily was determined to set a record for the most Girl Scout cookies sold, working 11 straight hours outside of her home to sell 500 boxes in a day. The funding raised will benefit childhood cancer research and feeding homeless communities. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning America's First News. We hope that you enjoyed today's podcast. If we left you wanting more, you're in luck. There's exclusive content, including maybe you, if you follow us over to the Stereo app. Join us live every Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern, where we'll be discussing topics we typically can't get to on our regular program. And best of all, we get to hear from you, answering your questions and hearing your comments. Don't miss out. Download the Stereo app now and be sure to follow me at stereo.com/Gordon Deal. That's stereo.com/Gordon Deal.